Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Good morning and welcome to Morning Java, brought to you as always by GetGo Cafe and Market, where as always, Dale, you can get fresh food, fresh drinks, and the curbside pickup in case you want to avoid as much contact as possible. But either way, when you go to GetGo, you get professional food and professional food prepared for you so that you're able to go about your day.
You can even order that online or download the GetGo app and do it that way as well.
There's a lot of different ways to get GetGo food. Get yours this week. I know I am. Dale, the Steelers got their own announcement this week. They have it's been reported, it's not officially announced, that Matt Canada is going to be the team's next offensive coordinator. Of course, Randy Feuchner was let go by the team. His contract was not renewed. And now Matt Canada, who after one season as the quarterback coach, is promoted. Dale, there's a debate I see going on between Steelers Nation as far as, is this just going to be more of the same, or is this a new guy because he's only been there for a year? Yeah, your face.
Steeler fans kill me sometimes.
Yep.
Because all season long, all I heard was, why don't they let Matt Canada call the plays? Why don't they do this? Matt Canada was hired. Now Matt Canada is going to be hired, and they don't love it. They don't. They settled for somebody in-house. What is this? Is just more of the same. Which is it, folks? You can't have it both ways. Matt Canada was brought in. I'm getting some pushback from people, and maybe you could explain this a little bit better, Chris, than apparently I have. Yes, they implemented some of Canada's pre-snap motions and things of that nature in the 14 practices that they had in training camp this year, 14 padded practices. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you're not going to do a complete install. They weren't installing Matt Canada's offense. They were tweaking their own offense based off of some of the things that Matt, the pre-snap motion that Matt Canada brought to the table. Once the regular season starts, you install a certain part of that. But once a regular season starts, you're not consistently adding to that package necessarily. You're doing what you need to win games. Now this year, they'll have an entire offseason to install this package and do what Matt Canada, and I'm sure it will be based off of their offense. You're not going to completely change your offensive calls. And quite frankly, Canada's offense and offensive scheme he's not reinventing the wheel here. All it is a bunch of pre-snap motion, and it's not even about the quarterback necessarily having a bunch of motion. It's moving tight ends around, moving wide receivers around, things of that nature, moving backs around. But there's a lot that goes into that. Once you get into the regular season, you're not doing a bunch of that stuff. You're not working on things of that nature. So that, you know, they install some pre-snap motions, things of that nature. But you're not suddenly running Matt Canada's offense during the regular season.
Right, and that's the thing, is that people had to realize during the season, and like you and I were both seeing it, people were saying, oh, that's Matt Canada calling the play. I'm like, no, calm down. That's not how this works. Yes, every assistant coach on the offense, when they meet and they're putting the playbook together, they are getting a say, and Randy Feuchner, whoever's the offensive coordinator, can put together all those different things to make the playbook. Matt Canada definitely added some wrinkles. That's because he's an assistant coach. That's part of his job. But to understand a huge difference from adding a few wrinkles and seeing some of those wrinkles in some of the plays that the Steelers called is way different from he went in there, went on the headset and said, Ben, you're running this play.
Yeah.
Right.
That's not how it works.
Right.
I also saw there was some stuff out there yesterday, when the Davante Adams touchdown on Saturday, where they run him across the formation in man coverage and get him open for a touchdown. And I immediately see the Steelers never do anything like that. Yeah, they do, actually. Yeah. They've done it quite a bit. They did it a lot when they had Antonio Brown. They've done it with Juju Smith-Schuster. Short memory spans from people. Nobody is reinventing offense at any level of football. The plays are the same largely no matter what. All you're doing is changing play callers here.
That's the thing. You're looking at play callers changing here. And then also you're looking at a guy there's got to be a new balance to the way the Steelers offense works. So a different approach with some different wrinkles, some adding more of his own wrinkles into this system, maybe finding a way to generate some ground game. Of course, that's also going to have to involve investments in the offensive line and in the running back position. But specifically with Matt Canada, yeah, you're going to see some different looks. But I think it's a misnomer for people to think that those were the times that the Steelers offense was succeeding were all because either Ben was drawing up plays in the dirt or Matt Canada was calling the plays. But none of the times they're succeeding was because of Randy Feakner. That's not how it worked. And that being said, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. That it's a bad thing that Matt Canada is getting promoted. All both of us are saying is that the impact of this, the obvious, you know, what everyone's going to try and say, whatever's going to happen, I guarantee you, and Dale probably agree with me, if the offense makes mistakes next year, if Ben Roethlisberger has a 4-interception game, there will be people blaming the offensive coordinator then.
All the offensive coordinator's fault.
Yeah, and then people, the same people that were saying it was Matt Canada saving the offense in 2020 are going to say he's burning it down in 2021. You know, again, it's not all as simple as, oh, you just got to call better plays. Sometimes you got to execute them better when they're on the field.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Dale. On top of offensive coordinator, the Steelers, of course, got rid of Sean Sarrett. Or didn't renew his contract, and he is now gone. They're going to be looking for a new offensive line coach. But there's a lot of questions as far as how they can proceed rebuilding the offensive line moving forward. You obviously need new pieces. Villanueva is not expected back. You know, you talked about in your 10 thoughts right after the game that you thought Pouncey would be gone this year. And, you know, there's going to be questions at right tackle. Was a core four good enough for them? What, you know, there's a lot of questions in this. And now, we got to look at what's more important in establishing this, the ground game for the Steelers. And I guarantee you this will be a debate for the next 8 months. But leading into the draft in April or May, whenever it is this year, everyone's going to be talking about should the Steelers take a running back in the first round or take an offensive lineman. And to me, there's still way too much in the air, up in the air to guarantee either way. It's going to depend on what players fall to them and who they sign in free agency. But I still think that the effort needs to be to make sure that this offensive line gets some anchors back on it.
See, to me, the easier, quicker fix is getting a running back.
Okay.
You know, again, if you look around the league, Minnesota does not have a great offensive line.
Very true.
Tennessee does not have a great offensive line. You could go on down the list of teams that don't have great offensive lines, but somehow run the ball effectively because they have a better running back. You know, if you watched in the game on Sunday, you know, some of the jump cuts and things of that nature that Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt made, that makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're just a straight one cut runner and you'd have no ability to cut back and do those kind of things, your offensive line has to block quite a bit differently than the, you know, you do for a great running back. You give a great running back a seam, and let's face it, and I know you probably saw this a lot too, there were some holes open this year that the Steeler running backs just either didn't have the ability to hit or hit quickly, or they did hit it, but instead of getting the 25-yard gain that was there or the 15-yard gain, they got 8 or 7.
Right.
They just didn't have any explosiveness.
And that's the problem. Even when, like, you know, a guy like Anthony McFarland, who you see, he can, once he gets up to speed, he can run away from people.
His problem is he's all arms and legs when he dances too much at the line of scrimmage.
Exactly.
You know, he looks like one of the old break dancers when he's going into the hole. There's just arms, you know, it's kind of a Tasmanian devil kind of thing with arms and legs going everywhere. Just hit the hole. What are you doing dancing? See, NFL, you can't dance.
Right. And at the same time, part of hitting the hole is also seeing the hole. And I think I saw problems with that with Benny Snell, times where he would like run into the back of his lineman, and it's like, dude, bounce it out left, and you have a seam. And then that's how you build up steam, vision, cutting, understanding how to use your athleticism on top of having that athleticism. Those are all vital things. And I agree, investing in a running back would be huge for this offense next year if they could get a playmaker back there. Because even like you said, they don't need a superstar offensive line, but I do think it would behoove them to try, especially in the first round. I think there's really good shots at some offensive tackles that could fall to them, maybe even some centers. If they're able to
invest. I would not draft a center in the first round this year. There's none.
You don't think any of them fall their way?
There's none that are worth taking in the first round.
Okay. Well, this is what I've been saying a lot. I talked to Tom about this last week. If they're going to reinvest in this offensive line, you got to sign a person in free agency and draft a person early on.
I wouldn't get into the market of signing an offensive line. First of all, they're not going to have the money to sign an offensive lineman in free agency unless it's one of their own. Mm-hmm. And they are going to, I expect them to re-sign Zach Banner soon.
I thought that too.
That won't take long. So that fixes part of your problem, or at least fills in part of one of your holes. And let's say he was one of your starting five coming out of training camp this year. And I think, his strength is his run blocking. So that's going to help make you better in that situation. And, playing the free agent game on the offensive line, you're always going to be disappointed because you're going to overpay for those guys. They don't have the cash to do it. Realistically, they could go into next year drafting the only guy who's going to start and be guaranteed a starting job would be the center. And I'm not taking a center in the first round in this draft, but you can get centers in the second and third rounds that are going to come in and play a lot of snaps for you and start right out of the gate. So to me, that's the way to do it. If you get a tackle in the first round, great. You're going to need him down the road as well. And he maybe helps with some of your blocking stuff as your sixth offensive lineman. As you saw this year, you needed that guy anyways. And, but if it's a running back, it's a running back.
So my last question on the running back situation, everyone's going to be talking about this too. If both are available to you, who do you take, Etienne or Harris?
Najee Harris. He fits more with what they do. I look at Etienne as more of a Jamal Charles type. Not that he's small or anything. I mean, he's 210 pounds, which is certainly big enough. And he's got, the breakaway speed. Najee Harris, scream Steelers running back.
Yep.
I'll be interested to see how fast he runs at the combine, whatever we have as a combine this year. If you're a Steeler fan, you don't want him running a sub 4.5 40. You want him being around 4.55, something along those lines. That's plenty fast enough. Mm-hmm. He catches the ball well. He's athletic. He blocks. He'll step in from day one and be your starter.
And like you said, if he runs that sub 4.5 and he's in the 4.4s, that means he's probably going to get drafted way high. So that's going to be something interesting to want. But Dale, we got lots of time to talk about that. So Dale, talking about Pitt hoops, switching up the topics a little bit here. Pitt's coming off of sweeping Syracuse in back-to-back games, oddly, of course, over across 10 days. But it's still a sweep. And now Pitt's got Justin Champagny back. They just had their most complete win of the season. They scored 96 points against Jim Boeheim's zone defense. And I know Jim Boeheim, Syracuse, they don't got the dogs that they do on some of their best years. But still, for this program, before this season, they hadn't beaten them, I think since 2017 or 2016. And now they've beaten them twice in a row. And you're seeing Champagny and Xavier Johnson feeding off of him. Adis Toney playing really solid defense, and you're seeing the team build off each other. And now the freshmen are getting involved. How real do you think that this Pitt team could be, even just this year? Because Champagny looks like he's a guy that if he keeps this kind of performances up, he's going to the NBA draft.
Yeah, it's interesting because they're doing this without a big guy. Mm-hmm. They really don't have a true center in there. They're using some guys in those spots, but Champagny, is rebounding like he's Charles Barkley or something. Yeah. It's 6'6". I'm just wondering. Let me ask you this, Chris. How did he get back so quickly? We were hearing that was a 6 or 7 week injury, and all of a sudden he's back on the court.
Jeff Capel said that he went through the same thing last year where he suffered an injury and he thought he would be out for a while. Champagny said the day after He was diagnosed, and they said you're going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. He said he like did some things with his legs, and he was like, "Oh, I'm going to be back in a month." Like,
what is I'll be Wolverine or something.
I mean, maybe he is. He has superhuman powers because every, I mean, and Jeff Capel. It was funny. They kept this as hush as possible. It was Ithiel Horton who let us know after the first Syracuse game. He was like, "Justin Chapin's dunking in practice," and we're like, "He is." Already? And we're like, okay, maybe he like lightly dunked. And then like they're like, no, he's dunking in practice. And then Jeff Capel tried to play it down this week before or last week before the Syracuse game. And then all of a sudden we get that tweet of him in his warm-ups in the locker room. We're like, oh, so he was dunking in practice. And then Capel revealed that he practiced in full the Saturday, a full week before Syracuse. So I think part of it is this guy's a true competitor and a warrior and a heck of an athlete because on top of, and we've said this before about other players and other sports, including with the Steelers, players that recover faster. It's, you know, a lot of times how amazing of an athlete are you to go through a recovery process and get back to it? And Dale, you saw that game. It was, he took like 5 minutes to warm back up and he was back to rebounding everywhere, scoring everywhere, working in the post, working in the wing and schooling everybody. Finished with 24 points and 16 rebounds. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't 24 and 16 against, you know, some low-level
St. Francis who beat them this year.
Right, when he was doing his 2020 stuff. That's 24 and 16 against Syracuse.
Yeah.
You know, that's a legit ACC opponent. You know, we'll see what they're able to get in here. They actually benefited from COVID a little bit.
Yeah, kind of crazy,
they had
right?
Some games pushed back. They would have played 5 or 6 games without Justin Champagny. Now all of a sudden they get him back. Obviously he's their best player, and you know you have to start if you're Pitt, if you're watching them and keeping a close eye on them. They're a legit potential tournament team. I realize the tournament might not look like what we're used to seeing, but. You know, think about where they were at just a couple of years ago.
Oh, God.
And Capel's doing a great job of rebuilding this thing.
We're seriously talking about Pitt being a tournament possibility right now, where people were joking about
wondering if they were going to win an ACC game 2 years ago.
Exactly. I mean, people were joking about, oh, the brick wall that Jeff Capel does, that seems so silly and meaningless. Well, guess what? He's building together that wall. And you're also right, Dale. They definitely benefited from it. Not saying, of course, that they wanted it or anything like that. But, you know, on top of, you know, of not having Champagne, had they had to play the game last Saturday or 2 Saturdays ago now, they would have also been missing 3 other players who were out for contact tracing. They got all of them back, and then they got Champagne back for this game. And now they're full strength, of course, minus John Hugley, who has, you know, been arrested for his things. But all things considered, they're in a very good place. And now they get to house Duke at the Pete. Duke hasn't been playing their best basketball. If they beat Duke at the Pete, I mean, I think all eyes are starting to look at them, but people are really going to start have to looking at Pitt as a serious ACC threat this year.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody saw that coming. Even the most hopeful of Pitt fans could not have seen that coming. Now, you got to beat Duke.
Right. You have to beat them.
As you mentioned, you know, this is not the same Duke team of previous years. You know, you just wonder a lot of times when you play one of these storied franchises, you know, they get a 5-point lead on you or 10-point lead or whatever it may be before the game even starts.
Yeah.
You know, Pitt has to realize that it's not playing Duke of, you know, 1986 Duke or something like that. They're playing the 2001 version of Duke, mm-hmm. and take the game to them. You know, I think they're doing some good things. They're shooting the ball better. And, you know, again, Champagne, you know, makes all the difference in the world.
I agree entirely. And what's crazy is we've seen this team stick to it and be persistent and be resilient. If they could come out and not have the ice cold starts that they've had in pretty much all of their games, imagine where they would be. Like, we saw them start to take control of that game against Syracuse, like right around late in the first half and then definitely in the second half. Imagine if they come out and Syracuse never gets an 8-point lead to start the game because Pitt's not hitting their shots early. That could change everything, especially against those teams that are serious threats this year and do have the dogs to run the court.
Yeah, and this was a good year. You know, the ACC is not what it has been. You know, I think this is a good year that maybe you go finish second, third, fourth. In the ACC this year because of where it's at, and who knows where that takes you recruiting-wise.
Absolutely.